Hello, I am Senior Airman Jill Manis, and you're listening to Beyond the Horizon, a podcast produced by the Ohio Air National Guard's 178th Wing in Springfield, Ohio. In today's show, I sat down with the state of Ohio's Outstanding Airman of the Year, Staff Sergeant Emily Thompson, an all-source intelligence analyst here at our very own 178th Wing. Sergeant Thompson ranked in the top 1% of her Airman Leadership School class. She earned the John Leviteau Award for Excellence. She provided 80 hours of spiritual and mental health resiliency support to over 300 Columbus area residents. Thompson answered an Ohio ATAG request to educate 50 squadron and group command leadership teams on the current activities and ambitions of near-peer threats China and Russia. She equipped attendees of the September Commander's Leadership Course with an understanding of their role in the long-term strategic competition. I am so excited to talk to her and share her career and her story thus far. So let's bring her on, and I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you for taking time out of your drill weekend to come and talk to me. I think this will be really fun and really interesting to get to know you. And I think that as the state Airman of the Year, everyone should get to know you, and hopefully we'll get some advice for airmen like me who maybe one day will want to attempt to be Airman of the Year, and just to like get to know you a little bit, because I feel like a lot of the time when people are getting these awards, you're seeing what all they accomplished, but you don't really know who they are yet. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be really cool for people at our base as well to get to kind of know you. So what is the Outstanding Airman of the Year Awards? What is it?
So the Outstanding Airman of the Year Award is just kind of the culmination of all of the best things an airman has done, spanning throughout pretty much the entire calendar year. And you get to compete against other outstanding airmen and their accomplishments. And it's a really a way that you can acknowledge the good that someone has done, which is something that, you know, my leadership has done for me. And that's why I'm here talking about it. I'm honestly just really happy and grateful to be here for it. But yeah, that's Outstanding Airman of the Year. Mm-hmm.
And so is this something that you were striving toward, or how did you get nominated? Did they nominate you? Did you go to your leadership and say, hey, this is something I'm interested in? How did that happen?
So it wasn't something that I initiated or really thought about. I don't really look for awards like when I'm doing my work, but incredibly thankful and honored that like my leadership took that initiative and put me forward. So they put me forward for the squadron, and then it progressed from there. And let me tell you, I wouldn't have been able to come all this way by myself, because I'm not that great at writing bullets, and just really honored to have leadership who really care about recognizing the good work that their airmen do. And just like that type of leadership and the belief and the pushing their airmen to do bigger and better things. That's how this all happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's name drop. Who are these amazing leadership that you have? Who are these people?
Well, first and foremost, my supervisor for the longest time was Master Sergeant Josh Kramer. He's been a huge help from the beginning when I got back from tech school, really showed me the ropes, pushed me to do more than I thought I could. But also Senior Master Sergeant Bennett, Senior Master Sergeant Bush, Major Kempfer, Chief Kempf, really a lot of the full-time staff in the 126 as well, because I was a technician for a little over a year before I started college, and they really just helped me grow into the person I am now.
So are you a drill status guardsman right now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so how long were you a technician, and did you enlist and then immediately decide to become a technician? How did that work with your career?
So after I enlisted, I obviously went through training, and after that I wasn't exactly sure if I wanted to start college right away, and a temporary technician position came open, and I was in the middle of summer, so I took that extra time and I ended up working there for about a year, a little over, And it just gave me a lot of like good experience. And then after about that year, that's when I started college.
So you were nominated mm-hmm. by your leadership.
Yes.
How did that feel? Did they tell you that they had nominated you before? So they do it quarterly, right? There's quarterly mm-hmm. and then they announce from the quarters who's the base Airman of the Year, and then you get, so did you find out like through an email that you were the quarterly winner, or how did that go about? How did that make you feel?
So, I mean, it feels amazing to be appreciated and recognized like that. For Airman of the Year, I did know I was being nominated just because I had to help, like, you know, give information so they could build those packages. But the first time I ever got an Airman of the Quarter award was my first year back from tech school, and they told me nothing. And it was just, I can't tell you, like, the feeling of just, like, happiness and shock being called up to stage and, like, being recognized for mm-hmm. my work, having no expectation of it. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a kindness for my leadership and just such an honor.
I'm sure you felt recognized for your efforts as well. Is that correct of me to assume?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's go back. Let's get to know Airman at the time. She's Staff Sergeant now. Airman at the time, Emily Thompson. Tell me about why you joined the Air National Guard.
I knew two things. I knew I wanted to go to college, and I knew I couldn't afford it. So that was the biggest driving factor of me going in. But I had help. My dad was Security Forces over at Reckenbacher for 24 years. So he already had like an in to the Guard and kind of presented that as an option to me. Because originally I wasn't really planning on joining the military. I was just going to go to college to get a job. But my dad had a good argument. He knew that, like, you know, I also didn't want to start life having a bunch of student loans and debt. And this seemed like a good option. But it's become so much more than that. That's why I joined, but that's not why I'm staying in. Honestly, being in this job in intel and specifically space intel is something that I'm super passionate about. I love my coworkers. I love my leadership. Like, it's just been a really overall positive experience for me.
And how did you pick the job of intel? I know when I was going in, I had no idea that was even an option.
There's actually a funny story with that, but my dad introduced me to it because he'd been around for a while, and like, I'm a huge nerd. So he's like, you probably want to do like one of the career fields that probably fit you a little better. So he's like, do comm or intel. So I told my recruiter, like, I wanted intel. I enlisted over at Rickenbacker. So my recruiter knew next to nothing about intel. And all of a sudden these two jobs come open, one for the 126th and one for the 127th. And he said, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what these jobs are. So, but he's like, I know someone who does, who can explain them to you. Just wait, I'll have someone call you, and you can talk about it. So the person who called me was Lieutenant Colonel Rourke, who was the 127th commander at the time. And so he gave, you know, the entire sales pitch about his squadron that I ended up turning down for the 126th. He then became the ISRG group commander and proceeded to make fun of me for it the entire time he was there until he moved to DC.
Oh, that is awesome. That is very funny. When he mentioned your dad, when he mentioned about joining the Guard, and he knew about it, and so he was in the Guard, correct? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Were you apprehensive to go in? Did you want to go in? Did you feel like it fit who you were? What were your thoughts?
So, like, initially signing the paperwork, it was, if it works out and I like it, awesome. If it doesn't, I can handle one weekend a month. You know, that was kind of my mentality going in. Since then, it's just become, like, it's become so much more, like, both in benefits towards me, like, it's given me a career outside of college. It's giving me just a lot of, like, leadership experience and, like, different things that I wouldn't be able to get outside of the military.
Yeah. I know for me, mm-hmm. I never thought that I would be someone that would fit in the Air National Guard or the military in general. And I did join, similar to you, to pay for college. And once I got here, I found public affairs something that I really did feel like I belong. But in the beginning, I was very nervous because I didn't think I was a military type person, but a military type person is not one person, mm-hmm. and you don't really realize that. So were you experiencing anything similar to that?
Yeah, I would say that I was pretty nervous starting out, especially, like, you know, with pop culture, you see, like, Full Metal Jacket and these movies that just portray, like, the military, especially boot camp. I know that's about Marines, but it's still in your head when you're thinking
exactly.
about it. And, like, so I was going down, like, when I was enlisting, I was like, okay, like, I gotta be prepared to, like, mentally just get through it. So by the time I actually got into training, I was so, like, mentally ready for it. That it wasn't as much of a like apprehension anymore. It was more of a let's do this. Yeah, it was a huge leap of faith because I had no idea who I was getting involved with, what I was getting involved in. I had no idea what it meant to be an airman, what it meant to have that kind of camaraderie between people. And I didn't even know Springfield was a base until my recruiter mentioned it.
Let's talk a little bit about your job. What do you do in your job?
So I am an all-source intelligence analyst that primarily focuses in space. And space has become such a critical part of our everyday lives. Like, just coming here this morning, like, just setting my alarm and making sure the time was right. Actually, that timing, the fact that it's so precise, is a function of space. Your GPS is a function of space. Our communication, our streaming, our TV is a function of space, the internet. And so we have so much critical infrastructure. And so what we do is we analyze this infrastructure and how there are threats to it, because space is a war-fighting domain now. And one of the ways that I help bring awareness to just how critical space is I'm a briefer as well. So I have to do a lot of public speaking, which I wasn't thrilled about in the beginning, but it's gotten better. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that is me just taking multiple resources, putting them together, and being able to accurately articulate threats, benefits, deficiencies, just whatever is needed that fits the commander's priorities.
When you're briefing these things, are you briefing them in front of your peers, or are you briefing them in front of your leadership? Who are you doing these briefs for?
So the answer to that is all of the above.
Yeah.
I have briefed a lot of times it's peers. I've briefed a lot of times in front of my squadron, a lot of times in front of the entire ISR group. I've briefed the wing commanders on a few occasions. But I've also been sent and briefed on TDYs to people I had no idea who they were. In last September, I went to the Commander Leadership Course up in Washington, D.C., and briefed the commander's spouses on current threats. So it's a little bit of everyone, a little bit of everywhere, and a little bit of everything.
Were you the type of person that was more comfortable speaking in front of a crowd before you enlisted, or was that, I know you said it was a long process, was that something you had to learn?
So, yeah, it's something that I have done before, and it's also been a very long process, because when I was a lot younger, like probably middle school, I was absolutely terrified of being on a stage or in front of anybody. It was probably my number one fear. But my school was a teeny tiny little Christian school with 50 kids in the high school and a 50 kid big choir. So choir was actually mandatory, and we had...
Wow.
Yeah, right. Whose school can you say had mandatory choir? So what would happen is that twice a year we would have concerts. So a Christmas concert, a spring concert. But we'd also go to competitions, and that was non-negotiable. So I really can credit that for helping me kind of get out of my comfort zone,
yeah.
getting in front of people, because like speaking in front of people is already nerve-wracking. Singing in front of people, also incredibly nerve-wracking.
Yes.
Luckily, I had some experience with that in high school before I, you know, became a briefer.
So what would you tell someone who is possibly a high school student, or really anyone who is interested in the job that you have, but they're really nervous about public speaking, but they want to do that. Do you have any advice for them?
I would say advice for public speaking is really just be comfortable being a little uncomfortable. Because, like, I get nervous still every single time. My hands get cold and my ears get hot and my voice shakes a little bit. But you learn how to manage it better. So you kind of learn how to internalize it. So I have people coming up to me sometimes after briefings and saying, "Wow, you look so calm and collected." I'm just like, I'm glad it comes across that way.
That's awesome, yeah.
With more practice becomes more progress. And you get better and better.
How has your experience as a whole been like so far?
It's definitely been overwhelmingly positive for me. A lot of my career hasn't been up to me so far. Like, yes, I chose the job. I chose to be in the 126 in Springfield. But I didn't choose, you know, who I was going to be working with, exactly what our mission was going to be, and what the culture was going to be like, who was going to be over me, leading me. A lot of it is attitude. If you really determine, like, I'm going to have a good day today, chances are you could still have a bad day, but chances are you're probably going to have a good day. You've got a brother or sister in arms. You've got your wingman.
So I'm reading your bio right now, and it says you were in the top 1% of your Airman Leadership School course. So did you go in person?
I was actually virtual, but I was in residence.
So how did you do that? I want to know, too. I'm in Airman Leadership School right now, and I want to be in the top 1%.
So that's a great question. So I think my first piece of advice is just be nice. Like, get to know people. Like, we say, like, be comfortable being a little uncomfortable. Like, get out of your comfort zone a little bit. Meet those people. Talk to them. Because I can guarantee you, like, when you are nice to someone, someone is way more likely to reciprocate that niceness back to you. And you establish a relationship, and with that relationship comes trust. And trust is all about what leadership really is. It's just a relationship of mutual respect with one another, even if you're above someone or under someone. Ask questions. Questions are how you get answers. Volunteer. Like, I know some people, you know, say, like, you know, don't volunteer or it's terrifying, whatever. But volunteer, because, again, you've got a support team with you. And no one wants to see you fail. And in the odd case that you do fail, well, what a great opportunity to learn from it. Especially now when we don't have, you know, airmen underneath us that are really, like, depending on us to be the best we can be. But now, like, as you're learning and transitioning from becoming an airman to a supervisor and a trainer, like, you kind of switch your focus from, okay, like, what can I do to help me and, like, to get me ready? What can I do to really learn the job? Is what can I do to help my person learn it? And I found that, honestly, when you teach someone or when you have someone that you're interacting with, you actually learn more from teaching it and retain more.
So you won the John Levitow Award for Excellence. What is that, and how did you win it?
So the John L. Levitow Award is the award for reserved for the top person in the class for, like, that week. So there were three classes, around 36 people, and I was voted as the top of that. So it has three categories. It has overall leadership, overall academics, and peer review. So not only were my academics pretty good. But I also was interviewed, just asked some leadership questions by the leadership down there at McGee Tyson, where it was based out of for me. But also, all of my peers came together and voted me as the top leader in the class, which I, again, was kind of just blown away by.
Wow.
But again, it was the relationships that you developed in the trust, because I think they knew, like, people can tell when you're genuine. And people can tell when you're fake. Like, even though you might say all the right things, if your actions don't back that up, or your countenance, or just how you interact with people, people can tell. Because of that, and also a lot of ALS is there's some briefing. There's a lot of like kind of Air Force philosophy. I kind of like philosophy and also briefing. I have a little bit of experience
in. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. So I was able to bring that experience to the table and bring my expertise in a way that was inviting for the rest of the class. And I think because of those relationships I developed with them, that's why I got the John Leviteau Award. When everything goes down, do you want a coworker by your side or a friend?
You provided 80 hours of spiritual and mental health resiliency support to over 300 Columbus area residents. That's a lot. What even was that?
I am a Christian and very active in my church. And my church is located in Clintonville in Columbus, which is just a couple miles north of Ohio State's campus. So we have a large number of people in and out, and that tends to be around 300 people. Also, in addition to serving with my church at Ohio State, I am the vice president of an organization called Ratio Christi, which is a Christian apologetics ministry which provides a logical defense of the Christian faith. So through that, I'm able to serve, you know, my people that are in that group, but also minister to people on campus who are struggling with either their faith or with just life in general, depression, like anxiety. At Ohio State, sometimes you feel like more like a number than a person.
I agree. I go to Ohio State. I go there. So
you know, with over 60,000 people at main campus, like no wonder you're going to feel isolated. You know, housing is expensive, college is expensive, like life kind of just sucks.
And it's so much change.
Oh,
in, in such little time when you're used to living with family and having constant support systems, and now you have to be your own support systems. I feel like luckily, since we have been in the military, we've been able to have a bit of a smoother transition because we do have that support, but also being pushed beyond that. But a lot of the time, even still, I feel overwhelmed by how much change. So
through that ministry, I'm able to talk to students on campus and just kind of just have a heart-to-heart. And like I said, with listening, some people just need someone that will listen to them. Even if we, you know, don't delve into deep theological topics, we just give someone a friend for a little bit.
You just be there for them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And sometimes that's all you need to do.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's very wonderful and very touching to hear that you're doing that and you care so much about other people to want to be that shoulder for them or be that wingman.
Yeah, the wingman concept does not end with drill weekend.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
And it doesn't end with fellow wingmen. Like, we're all in this together. And some people have it better, some people have it worse, but we're all in the same storm, just got different boats.
I think you may have mentioned this about educating command leadership teams. Was it teams? And so you said it was leadership's spouses.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so can you tell me a little bit? And it says it was an ATAG request. So was this something you were tasked to do? Did you volunteer? How did that go?
So I think that might be referring to two different things.
Okay.
So the ATAG request was really to put together a comprehensive overview of the threat that the People's Republic of China poses to America. And it really is a large threat. I hear it both on the military side and on the civilian side. You can't get away from it either way. So part of that was just providing information, kind of background, some of the history of China, some of the philosophy of like why they do things the way that they do. Honestly, like just kind of separating also the people from the government. So that way we're not looking at the Chinese people as a threat, but at the Chinese government. And the same thing, like, you know, even here in America, we separate the government from the people. We see it that way, but we also need to see them that way too. So primarily this was talking about more of the military threat that's posted against us, and just kind of some updates on what exactly the situation looks like in specifically the South China Sea area, as we, you know, we both, us and China, have a lot of assets there right now. So really just bringing awareness to the fact that this is a growing problem.
Wow. That's all I can say. Like, I don't even know. I am so impressed by how knowledgeable you are and how eloquently you are able to speak about this. And that is quite literally your job. But let's get a little bit more into who you are again. I'm sure you have plenty, but if you could name a few and talk about a few of your mentors or inspirational people that you've had throughout your life.
Yeah. So my grandma, first and foremost, she is basically my mom in every way, obviously except biological. She's been a huge just like building stone for me, like to just latch onto and just to learn from. She's a wealth of knowledge, and she's awesome. So there's not much more that I can say about her except, like, I just want to be like her. My dad has also been a huge help. He's very smart. He's constantly self-sacrificing, helping other people. He's got a tremendous work ethic, and, like, I really admire that about him. But as far as, like, mentors in the military have gone, obviously the people I mentioned before, my supervisor, Sergeant Kramer, Sergeant Bennett, Sergeant Bush, Chief Kemp, Major Kemper, and many others. But also, it's kind of funny, one of the former wing commanders of this base, so Colonel Greg Hesterman. So actually, when I was working at Meyer while I was waiting to go to basic training, I had a buddy there that went to this local church. And I was like, okay, like, I'll come with you one time. I'll check out your young adult group. Little did I know, the leader of that young adult group was Colonel Hesterman and his wife, Amy. And I live about 70 miles away from base, and they live about 2 miles from my house.
Oh, my. And this is before you went to basic, but you were enlisted?
Yes. So I'd seen him, you know, checking IDs at the gate. I'd seen him in the food lines, but I never had, like, an actual conversation with him. And all of a sudden, he's just like, when I first saw him, he's like, do I know you from somewhere? And I'm like, yes, sir.
So, that is awesome.
And it's been really incredible because both he and his wife are just a wealth of information, experience, and knowledge that I can just latch onto and learn from.
I believe that that gives you so much more confidence as you go throughout life because you know you have that support system in your grandma, in your dad, in Amy, in, you know, all of these in your leadership. Having that support system, at least for me, always pushes me to get a little bit out of my comfort zone because I know if I push myself too far, I'm always going to have people to help me and rely on and get me through to the next thing.
And especially having, like, strong female people to admire, like with my grandma. Yeah, absolutely. Like, not only do I want to be here, but she's helped me every step along the way. And, like, Amy Hesterman, another great example of another woman who's helped me move forward. And someone like Senior Master Sergeant Bennett, she has also kind of showed me, like, you know, what it's like to be a woman in the military and, like, what it means, like, how we're different, but, like, how we can celebrate that difference. And, like, so just having those strong female mentors as well as those strong male mentors, like, it's been good to have, like, both. Not many people know about the Guard, and then less people know what the Guard is like. So being able to bring in those family members and those friends gets to show them the human part of the Guard, like this podcast.
Exactly. And I was going to say the same thing. Like, that's what we are trying to do with creating this podcast so that people know, hey, we're just members of the community just like you, and we're trying to make a difference. We're trying to better ourselves. And hopefully somebody hears this podcast that is debating joining and is wanting to, is like me and is nervous about not feeling like they fit in, and knowing that there's definitely going to be a place for you, even if you don't feel like you are that military quote unquote type of person. So
yeah, because, you know, we're we're more than a uniform.
Exactly.
There's a lot to the uniform and a lot that comes with that, a lot of responsibility, a lot of heritage, a lot of pride. I know General Camp came through here a little while ago, and I know one of his priorities is recruiting and retention. Just talking about the Guard, like letting people know that you're a part of it. Even outside of uniform, you're still an ambassador. You're still that connection piece for them.
Taking it back to like what you said about having a female mentor is completely different. I know when I was contemplating joining, my dad is also in the military, mm-hmm. and he was pushing me, and obviously I trusted him, but it wasn't until one of my very close friends, who is actually a part of this base as well, she enlisted about 3 years before I eventually did, and after she did, and I saw her being able to excel and all the benefits she was getting, and being able to see myself a little more in her really helped me and really pushed me, and it showed me, hey, I can do this too.
Like, you can tell me as much about basic training as possible, but with some of the more intimate details, like, that I need to know, but am definitely not going to ask a guy about, like, you need those women there too.
I absolutely agree.
Like, I have a ton of female friends, a ton of male friends, and I value them all, but it's nice to have a good balance.
And it feels like a very inclusive environment. I don't know if you feel that way, but mm-hmm. I feel valued. I feel I really do feel a part of something in the Air Force and in the Air National Guard, because like you said, I feel like that's a unique thing mm-hmm. to us. And I know that the other branches are slowly but surely making their way in that direction.
And with the Airman of the Year stuff and with my progression so far, like, I never felt like I was given the award because, like, I'm, like, a good female airman. Like, I was just a good airman. I think the days are mostly behind us where that prejudice still exists. And I think that the culture and the ISR group, at least in my experience, has really just been very inclusive and very supportive of all airmen, regardless of who they are, where they come from, what their gender is.
What is some advice that you would give to other airmen, from airman basic to senior airmen? What is some advice that you would give these airmen to help them excel in their careers?
So I'm going to double tap on a couple of things I've mentioned because I think it's important. But something I haven't mentioned yet is, like, know your job. Like, what is an airman's job? Not what is your AFSC, but what is an airman's job? And it is to be a sponge. It is to take in everything. And honestly, this goes, you know, this is specifically to airmen, but it applies to everybody. Learn from anyone, anywhere, at any time. Ask questions. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot we don't know. We don't want to look dumb. It's scary putting your hand up and asking a question, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, you have that fear of people being like, how do you not know that? I'm like, there's an old saying that I think is pretty good, is don't assume, because it makes an ass out of you and me. Be honest. Have integrity. I heard a great quote that I don't remember word for word, so I'm going to paraphrase it, from, I think, Thomas Sowell. It's like, if you want to help someone, tell them the truth. If you want to help yourself, tell them what they want to hear. And I think that is so true. It's like, if you care about people, you care about, like, how they grow and how they develop, and this is a lot towards leadership, too, like, be honest with them. Even if honesty sucks, like, and then also, for airmen, volunteer. Like, don't be afraid of it, because you've got a great support system. You've got everybody rooting for you. And if you do fail, which, again, unlikely, don't waste that opportunity.
What drives you? That's a big question. That's a loaded question. But I just want to know, what drives you to be who you are?
So it's a big question, but luckily one that I know the answer to. It's my faith, plain and simple. It is my entire identity. It's how I interact with people. Because, you know, you talk about your why you do things. what motivates you. And it is to serve others. And the way that I love others is by serving them. It just looks like serving from both the front and the back. I'm gonna steal from Arnold Schwarzenegger. There is no such thing as a self-made man or mm-hmm. woman in this case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a product of opportunities that I didn't give myself. I'm the product of a lot of the experience of people I did not choose to work with. Happy I do, though. And just because, like, I realize that a lot of this isn't me, I think helps to keep me a little bit humble and to really, like, step back and just take a minute to take in. Like, I have so much. I'm so blessed. And the same thing, like, with this base and with this award, like, I know that there are so many other airmen that are just as deserving, and like they've done incredible things, or like, and I'm glad that they chose me, but even if they didn't, they still would have made the right choice, because I saw some of the other packages from the other airmen, and I'm like, whoa, how am I up against these people? Like, it's incredible the amount of like work and effort, but like the potential people have seen, and just the graciousness that God has had in my life has really been incredible.
I know, like you said, we've talked about a lot of mentorship, but you really are also may not be a mentor, but an example of what is possible and what is capable. In that light, I personally want to thank you for everything that you've done and who you are and what you've pushed yourself to be.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how incredibly honored I am to like have you say that, and just to like hear that like people are seeing what I'm doing and responding positively to it is huge.
We're gonna kind of talk about goals now. Let's move into the future. How long, just generally, how long do you think you'll stay in? Are you here for the 20? What are you thinking?
Honestly, I think I'm here for the long haul. I kind of envision myself either becoming a colonel or a chief.
Oh, I can totally see it. I can totally see it. And I know you would do amazing at both. Have you thought about your long-term career goals?
It's hard to come up with those goals. I have ambitions, for sure. I do, at this point, want to see if I can become an officer. I think that would be awesome. I don't know if it'll happen. Right now, I'm focusing on getting through college. I have about 2.5 years left. After that, I'd love to stay with the Guard, and whether that's in a full-time capacity or as a DSG, I'm not sure. I don't know what the future holds, but I do have ambitions. I want to take my military career far, and like I want to invest in it because it's already invested a lot in me. So excited for the new opportunities coming up with the ISR group and the transition at Mansfield. It's incredible. We're leading the charge in the Ohio Air National Guard, and I love it. I'm here for it.
With OAY in particular, what's the next? Is it regional that you're going to go to?
Yes. So I don't know a lot about it yet. I believe it's at the end of this month, the end of February, and it's in Michigan. However, I don't know if I am going to be there in person or not. I've actually never been to Michigan.
Wow.
Believe it or not. I've been to like every state surrounding mm-hmm. Ohio, but not Michigan. So if I go up there, it will be my first time in Michigan, and I'm excited to represent this base. And also excited to see like the other airmen that have just been outstanding in their states.
What's something about you that not a lot of people would know?
I'm actually an ordained minister.
No way.
I can legally marry people.
Oh.
Perform funerals, start my own church, and baptize under the Universal Life Church.
That is hilarious.
So the only requirement was you had to be 18 or older. I was 18. Yeah. So I've been a minister for 4 years.
I really do want to thank you for taking your time to come in and talk to not only me, but everybody who is going to be listening to this, because like I said before, you really do inspire people. I think, at least I know I and a lot of people I've talked about this with, really do feel inspired by seeing people our age, our level in careers, doing something that's excelling, and it really pushes us to want to better ourselves. So I really do want to thank you for taking your time to be a part of this and doing what you do and being a great part of the military and a great airman.
And I want to reciprocate that thanks to you for having me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's conversation, remember to subscribe for more. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at 178wing. You can also write to us at beyondthehorizonpodcast@gmail.com. I hope to see you next time. Until then, keep your eyes on the horizon.